Risk mitigation during construction and maintenance. FGI guidelines require that an ICRA include written infection control risk mitigation recommendation, ICARIR, plans prepared by the ICRA team. These written plans describe the work process and equipment requirements for managing potential infection risks and, at a minimum, should address patient locations relative to construction and any need for patient relocation. Patient locations include areas where work takes place, adjacent areas, and areas above and below in order to plan mitigation activities if needed. Supply storage areas, containment barriers and other ICRMRs, construction phases and their impact on plumbing and ventilation systems, effects of the construction on traffic flow, access to exits and operation of life safety systems, any training required for staff, construction workers, patients, or visitors. Directions on lavatory and eating facilities that are available for construction workers' use. Requirements that new materials being installed be clean and free from water damage. How the project will be monitored to validate the ICRMRs and written procedures to stop work when necessary. Ideally, the healthcare facility will have a policy that describes how the IP works with the construction team to establish and validate ICRMRs. A common model is for the IP to work with other stakeholders in establishing policies and procedures and then to conduct periodic audits to validate compliance with the agreed-upon policies and procedures. An infection control construction permit, posted at the job site and following the ICRA in detail, allows the IP to monitor infection control practices and ensure that proper precautions are being taken. The permit example in Exhibit 5-11 shows the construction information, type of activity, risk groups, class, and recommendations during construction, as well as who authorizes the work and who signs the permit. Exhibit 5-11. Infection Control Construction Permit. Key point: it is not the IP's job to tell a contractor how to do their work. The IP's job is to verify that work is conducted in a manner that adequately controls the risk of potential infections and complies with the ICRMRs. The IP should work with and through the facility's project manager. Telling the contractor how to do their work may result in problems with project schedules, costs, and liability. Conducting periodic interdisciplinary rounds of the construction sites with the project manager and safety, security, and contractor representatives is a good way for the IP to validate compliance with the ICRMRs and to ensure that any problems that may be found are corrected. Posting the IPC requirements at the site can help to maintain and monitor compliance. Any TB screening and vaccination requirements for construction workers should be clearly stated in contracts. A high turnover rate among these workers, as well as the associated time and costs, may make this requirement difficult to implement. Screen workers and restrict those with active coughing or exposed skin rashes from working in patient care areas. PPE for infection prevention should be supplied as necessary to any maintenance or construction staff. Infection risks due to construction are primarily mold spores carried by air movement and water pathogens in plumbing systems containing stagnant water or disrupted biofilms. Additionally, patients may be disrupted due to noise, vibrations, odors, and other issues. This is particularly true when patients cannot be relocated during construction. Flooding may also occur and cause damage or other issues due to mold. Ventilation systems and pressure. Ventilation management and risk mitigation is key to infection prevention and control during construction. To prevent contamination of other areas in the same ventilation zone during construction work and to prevent the ventilation from interfering with establishing negative pressure, seal air supply and return grills. Ensure that active return air ducts do not leak or are wrapped in plastic sheeting. Cover exhaust grills with filtering material and connect to exterior fans. Turn off and seal exhaust systems with fans pushing air out. Verify the proper air pressure balances in adjacent areas after containment is established. Exhaust air from contained workspaces within the zone relative to adjacent spaces. Pull air out of contained work zones with a fan when exhaust air is directed outdoors and away from pedestrian traffic. Use HEPA-filtered air moving devices, negative air machines, for exhaust air directed back into the building or outdoors near an air intake or pedestrian traffic. Properly install HEPA filters in negative air machines and check for damage. Use airborne particle counting over visual inspection to locate small gaps or tears. Check pre-filters for adequate airflow through negative air machines, especially during demolition and construction phases involving sanding. digitally or manually measure and log the negative air pressure differential between contained and adjacent spaces. For high-risk or sensitive locations, use pressure monitoring devices that can sound alarms and send phone or text messages when the negative pressure is failing. The FGI guidelines call for the contained construction space in high-risk areas to have a minimum of 0.03 inches of negative water pressure relative to the adjacent spaces in the building, as well as a visual display of the pressure differential. There is no established amount of negative pressure required for other locations. Without enough negative pressure, the effectiveness of controlling emissions from the containment is reduced, but too much negative pressure can pull down containment barriers, especially those built with plastic sheeting. Exhausting air outdoors or to a different ventilation zone can affect the ventilation balance of the occupied spaces adjacent to the contained work zone. When designing the negative pressure ventilation for a contained work zone, the ICRA team must verify that adjacent ventilation systems will not be adversely affected. Key point: for smaller jobs and work above ceilings, portable containment units, which incorporate the containment barrier and negative air machine into a system that can be wheeled through a corridor and then set up at the work site, are available. These devices can have flexible or rigid walls. Some are clear to allow observation of the work occurring inside. Others are opaque. Workers who will use these portable containment units should be trained in their proper setup and use. Depending on where they are stored and the type of work performed, these units may require cleaning before transport through the facility to the job site. When selecting a portable containment unit, the IP should ensure that it is adequately sized to contain the workers and tools required to complete the task. A vacuum inside the portable containment may be used to remove accumulated dust from the workers and tools before they leave the containment area. Dust control. Workers should clean loose dust from their clothes and tools with a HEPA-filtered vacuum before leaving the contained workspace. Shoe covers that are put on before leaving the contained work zone will control dust. Place tacky mats at the exits of the contained workspace and promptly remove when soiled. Wet mats are another technique used to remove dust from the bottoms of shoes. When used in combination with tacky mats, use an additional dry mat after the wet mat. Consider cleaning and drying wet mats every 2 to 3 days to control mold growth in the mats themselves. Whenever possible, establish a dedicated traffic route away from patient areas for workers, supplies, and debris. A trash chute is the preferred method for removing debris from contained work zones on upper floors so that it does not need to be transported through the facility. Design the trash chute to close when not in use so that it does not interfere with efforts to maintain negative pressure. When a chute is not possible, debris may be removed using carts. Carts must be covered tightly and their exteriors cleaned before leaving the containment area. Transport through the healthcare facility should occur during the lowest activity period, using a route agreed upon as part of the traffic flow planning stage of the ICRA process. Key point: it is important to control airborne dust from construction, and thereby also airborne mold spore levels inside the construction containment area. Higher levels of airborne contamination tend to increase the amount of dust that leaves the containment site when doors are open and workers leave the site. HEPA filters used on containment exhaust are very efficient, but they are not 100% effective. The higher the dust levels are in the containment area, the more dust passes with the exhausted air through the filter and out of the construction containment area. Prevent debris from accumulating on the floor and control dust levels with good housekeeping practices, such as the use of HEPA-filtered vacuums. A HEPA-filtered vacuum should have a filter certified to capture 0.3 micron particles at a minimum efficiency of 99.97%. There should be gasket seals on the filter to ensure that air cannot bypass the filter. Filters that are added to shop vacuums as aftermarket modifications or that claim HEPA filtration capabilities without certification may not deliver the level of filtration and protection of a true HEPA-filtered vacuum. These filters may have leaks, or the design may allow air to be pulled through seals that are damaged or not seated properly. Using HEPA-filtered vacuums will help to reduce the airborne dust levels inside the containment area. A fine water mist can also help clean fine dust from the air. Additional negative air machines set up inside the containment area recirculate and scrub the air within. Barrier systems. Barrier systems may be used to contain dust generated during construction along with any potentially infectious microorganisms. They may be constructed of flame-retardant plastic sheeting, rigid plastic panels, or drywall board. In addition to physical containment barriers, exhausting air from the contained construction space can create negative pressure in the contained space relative to adjacent occupied spaces. This results in airflow from clean adjacent spaces into the contained workspace and then out the exhaust. The exhaust may be to the outdoors or directed back into the building after it passes through a HEPA filter. Key point: when designing the construction containment, it is important to consider the building's life safety equipment and requirements. Annunciators for fire alarms, alarm pole stations, and sprinkler heads may need to be relocated if the containment will cover or otherwise interfere with their operation. Ensure that sufficient width remains in corridors, after containment construction, for patient transport as well as to meet code requirements for emergency egress. Considerations for outdoor projects. Construction work outside the healthcare facility can generate increased airborne contaminants, which may be drawn into the facility through mechanical ventilation, fresh air intakes, open doors and windows, and occupant traffic. Consider the location of building air intakes, occupant walkways, and windows and doors relative to nearby demolition or excavation projects as a part of the IGRA. It may be prudent to temporarily relocate pedestrian walkways or increase the level of filtration for ventilation, fresh air intakes. Adding filtration to the intakes and filter loading due to higher than typical airborne dust levels can restrict airflow and negatively affect the operation of the ventilation system. For a short duration project, it may be possible to close the ventilation systems outside air intakes near the project. Water sprays can control airborne dust emissions from demolition or excavation. Water used for dust control should be potable to minimize the potential for aerosolizing possible pathogens or endotoxins from microbial contaminants in non-potable water. Risk mitigation during maintenance. Maintenance and engineering department responsibilities may vary widely based on facility size, type, and capabilities. However, the following list provides typical responsibilities of the department with regard to normal maintenance responsibilities. Equipment repair and maintenance varies broadly but would typically include patient beds, tables, and other furniture, wheelchairs, and scales, sterilizers, and other laboratory equipment. System maintenance and repair may include pneumatic tube, nurse call and code blue, duress, access control, and fire alarm systems, as well as elevators and other lifts. HVAC systems are critical to a safe environment. These include air supply, return, and exhaust systems, as well as heating, cooling, and humidification and filtration systems. Utility systems management includes, in addition to the HVAC equipment noted above, the following: electrical system and emergency power systems, medical gas systems, including oxygen, medical air, nitrogen, and medical vacuum, as well as piped anesthesia gases, potable water and wastewater systems, boiler, steam, and hot water systems, pager and communication systems. Facility infrastructure maintenance and repair includes elements such as roofing, window systems, flooring, ceiling and walls, and doors and hardware, grounds and landscaping. Building renovations and alterations typically include planning, design, and construction activities, though the responsibility for this work varies greatly. The IP must understand the processes that frame this work so they can provide the appropriate input. Emergency preparedness programs are typically collaborative efforts, but the maintenance and engineering, MEI, management and staff will play a leading role, as the systems noted above are important to such programs. Key point: many of the IPC considerations with regard to maintenance activities are the same as those for construction and providing a safe care environment. It is important that maintenance and engineering personnel be aware of the risks that may be encountered when maintaining the various systems for which they are responsible. They should also wear appropriate PPE and conform with all applicable standard and transmission-based precautions. Monitoring the effectiveness of mitigation efforts. Laser particle counters are recommended for monitoring the effectiveness of the construction containment. A significant increase in airborne particle counts near the construction containment relative to the surrounding background levels may indicate a breach or leak. There are no established safe or unsafe particle levels to use for comparison, and the level of particles in the air will vary with the amount of activity in the area. But using the counter as a sniffer can guide the user to possible sources of elevated particle counts. Particle counters are also useful to verify whether HEPA filters and vacuums and negative air machines are working properly. Many particle counters will operate in an automatic mode, periodically taking and logging samples. This makes for an effective method to monitor the effectiveness of the containment controls over extended periods. Key point: the CDC does not recommend sampling for airborne microbial contaminants before, during, or after construction projects. However, it does recommend active surveillance to monitor for airborne infections in immunocompromised patients, as well as a periodic review of laboratory results and postmortem data to identify additional cases of airborne infection that are possibly related to construction activities. When air sampling for microbial levels is necessary, the sampling campaign must be well designed by an experienced individual so that it addresses the complexities inherent in conducting and interpreting the results. Commissioning. Guidelines place an emphasis on commissioning, which is a process that verifies delivery of new construction according to contract specifications. This happens before the new construction is accepted by the owner. Commissioning for ventilation equipment requires identifying acceptance criteria that permit the verification of critical ventilation specifications for air balance and filtration before the owner accepts delivery, often referred to as testing, adjusting, and balancing. Before the project is turned over to the owner, air quality should be measured. One way to measure total air particulates is the use of electronic monitors or particle counters, which ensure that the system is delivering air quality according to specifications. This method is being considered more frequently, but is not considered routine testing. No current recommendations or regulations exist regarding the frequency of checking the effectiveness of filters. One source suggests 6 months as reasonable. Another strongly suggests certification and recertification of operating room HVAC and filtration systems. The Joint Commission, in their 2009 Environment of Care Standards, states that the facility identifies in writing inspection and maintenance activities for all operating components of utility systems and identifies in writing the intervals for inspecting, testing, and maintaining all operating components of the utility systems on the inventory based on criteria such as manufacturer's recommendations, risk levels, or hospital experience. Monitoring the need to change or clean filters more frequently is important during new construction or renovation.